Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Oh. Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into another edition of 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush, joined as always by Adam Luckett, Oklahoma's finest. That's not his Twitter handle, though. That's your brother's.
Yes, that's correct. Ms. Roush, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. It's getting hot, though.
It's definitely starting to heat up. Definitely grass cutting season. May 19th, mm-hmm. Wednesday, we're recording it. We'll take it's 1:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right now. We are officially 100 days out from the college football season starting before week zero, 100 days from week zero kicking off.
Ooh. Yeah.
So now I think this is kind of, we're getting in the dog days territory.
Well, the good thing is we're getting just enough stuff to kind of drag us along a little bit. So I know that earlier this week, ESPN, they announced their kickoff times and network assignments mm-hmm. for opening week. That was a good start. And today we also got coaching rankings from CBS Sports, which we're really going to dive into. Luckett did his entire rankings himself as well, 1 through 65. So we'll be able to kind of compare notes, compare and contrast. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast, there was a lot of kind of little news tidbits throughout the week. We learned that Will Levis, after graduating from Penn State, instead of hanging around, he got straight to Lexington. He's on Kentucky's campus. And what I love, Luckett, is that even though we only got, we haven't really got much new on the quarterback competition. I know Liam Cohen was on KSR last week. We haven't got anything new. And you check the KSR comment section, there's 30 comments talking about Will Levis and quarterbacks. Like, that's love it. Absolutely love it.
That drives the train. People love quarterback competitions. And I think Levis arriving early, I don't think that should be a surprise. I think he got down here literally as fast as he could.
Hope that gas shortage didn't hurt him.
right.
Getting here from the East Coast. But, it is significant in that they don't have to be here until June, and there's nothing official happening. The team is currently off. This is one of the two times they get off all year long between graduation and summer workouts in June. But he'll still be able to do so. He'll still be able to get into the facility, workout. He'll be able to throw with his receivers, whoever else is still in town. So I do think that it is there is still something to him getting here a few weeks early.
Yeah, it's vacation time. Like, if the players are going to go on a trip with their families, now's the time to do it. I think you've seen some players on Instagram, Twitter, posting pictures of whatever beach trip they're making. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is the time to step away. But, yeah, it's the official season kind of starts for them in June. Like, it's June all the way through once they get back on campus mm-hmm. with weightlifting, conditioning, training, and then getting into fall camp when that arrives. First week of August or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think now with Levis now in Lexington, the quarterback competition has officially begun. I think we even heard Liam Cohen talk about how the spring wasn't really a competition. It was more install.
Yeah.
And the fall camp's going to be position competition. And that now, I think that starts now with getting together, throwing the ball, running 7-on-7s individually for the next couple months over the summer, building a rapport with the receivers and leading that into camp and then seeing how the competition goes. But yeah, I think it's definitely a competition that has started now, and it's Levis versus Gatewood. And we're going to be trying to dig and get as much information as possible, but we're probably not going to know anything, I would imagine, until game week or week or the Thursday before game week starts there at the end of August.
They're going to try to keep the results of that first scrimmage.
Rimage, right.
That one's going to be incredibly tight-lipped. But I think after the second one, we'll have a good idea, and it won't be, I don't even know if Stoops will name a starter or not on week one.
I think he will. He's usually been team name starter.
instead of waiting up till game time or kickoff or whatever. But I think after that second scrimmage, we'll have a good idea of who it will be. But that's a long way away. Like you said, it's a little under 100 days from that second scrimmage that they usually do 2 weeks, I believe 2 weeks prior to kickoff. So we'll learn more then. You did mention something that I want to bring up. Dude, how great would it be to be a football player in June? Like, your day is either work out, go to class, or go to class, then work out. And then you're done at, like, 1 o'clock.
Yeah. A lot of Xbox. If you like to play golf, play pool some time. Golf.
I mean, pool. The pool at the Lex, that was the happening place back in the day. Like, did you ever do a summer in Lexington?
I did 2 summers in Lexington.
How great were they? Traffic.
College summer is fun.
Because it feels not like as many
people are there.
Yeah, it feels like you've got it to the campus to yourself, you know?
Yeah, more selective. The pool, like, if you got somebody somebody lives in an apartment complex with a nice pool, that's always something to do during the weekdays. It's just, I mean, it's a mini version of spring break, really.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're, like, I was underage for one of them. I didn't even have a fake ID, but it did not matter. I'm 5 inches.
Going to 2 Keys on Tuesdays for fish bowls.
Don't give a damn. And the best part, too, like Tin Roof, you weren't waiting in line for a drink at Tin Roof. That place, it gets shoulder to shoulder. No, it's nice and relaxed. Summers in Lexington really are the bomb, which that is kind of like right now you talk about, you can start to feel it. The humidity, pretty gross, but at night. And in the mornings, it's nice and cool. Kind of sit out on the back porch. It's I'm getting a little fired up.
This was this was the best time, I think. Honestly, because you're out of you're done with school, and a lot of the summer school starts in June. So if you were in any classes over the summer, you kind of had this 2-3 week break. and so right now, this is probably the best time to be. To be those guys. Some are still on campus, some are going home, then you get back on campus. And then when you get back on campus, it's fun to see everybody again.
Yeah, yeah. Because
you haven't seen each other in a few weeks.
Yeah, you were probably getting sick of seeing each other too. But now you're back to like talking shit about who's lifting better, you know, just stuff like that. The kind of BSing around. And you're not going to have to deal with all the COVID protocols anymore. Like this Like for me, Derby was I'm back to normal. They're not going to feel normal until they get back in June, and it really is going to be like hitting the reset button. You just know there's going to be a lot of juice in the air over at the craft facility.
Yeah. Back for me, it's going to be probably going to that first football game where people are actually tailgating. God, there's a lot of people in the seats.
That was so terrible. No tailgating.
Yeah. That's like going to the Gator Bowl, like being able to drink a beer in the parking lot was like a new baptism for me. I was like, man, this, I missed this. But at the same time, it was really weird because no one's really like, there were some people tailgating, but everybody spaced out. They had the mask police running up and down, make sure everybody's social distancing. But I think that first tailgate when old Terry Bowden rolls into town, I think that's going to be an exciting time.
Just a little over 100 days away until that kickoff September 4th against Louisiana Monroe. And we've got some updates because right now Stoops, he has some coaching things in the mix. So the first that our boss Matt Jones reported, Javon Bonight, Coach Bo, is remaining on Stoops' staff. He's being disciplined internally after he was arrested for a DUI a couple weeks ago in Northern Kentucky. And as we'll see with the defensive back coaching search, I think some of it is the timing of this and the complications of trying to find a new guy to fill that spot in May. And I also think some of this is Stoops is a guy that has never hesitated to give people second chances.
I think we talked about it last week. I think we both expected him to be back for a multitude of reasons. But at the same time, I don't think it'd be crazy if they were looking for a new receiver coach in December.
Right, right.
So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. I think this is probably the right move. Bring him back, handle it internally, and just deal with that in-house and see how that goes and do what the community service, whatever he's got to do for that.
Yeah, I was about to say, I wonder what the discipline is for, like, it's not like you can run a coach, like you can run a player, you know? So I guess community service is probably the discipline. Maybe you get docked a couple weeks pay or something like that, like a suspension of sorts.
I mean,
go through like an alcohol program or something.
I don't know what the university bylaws are. Mm-hmm. I would imagine a lot of it is, don't you F and do it again kind of thing, you know? Like, there's not much, he's a grown ass man, you right. know? There's not much you can say to him. He knows what he did was wrong, blah, blah, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really it. Now, yeah, I don't know if a university employee, if they have something in their contract where they have to go through some type of training, if that happens, that may be the case.
Do you remember?
I know made me go through something when yes. I got caught having a party in college there. So is Jovan Bunite, is he going to be down at the soup kitchen with some college kids?
Or working the Goodwill. That was where everybody went for their diversion community service. Little spoiler. I don't know if they still do this. I think they got in trouble for it. But the Goodwill that's on whatever that road that Lexcath is on. I can't think of it off the
Clay's Mill.
Clay's Mill.
Been there, yes.
Yeah, that Goodwill would just you would just show up for one day and they would just say, just fill in the blank for your community service hour. So you could knock out 15 in 3 hours. It was clutch.
Guy would stay here for 5 hours, I'll sign you for 15 kind of thing.
It's great. Oh man, getting out of trouble. Yeah. I kind of miss it, but I'm also glad. Because getting in trouble now, much more serious, as Coach Bo was saying. As for the defensive back coaching vacancy left by Steve Klinkscale, Jonathan Cooley was the guy that they had zeroed in on, as Football Scoop likes to use in their terminology. And Josh Edwards over at 24/7 reported that there was some back and forth, and he ultimately accepted the Rams' offer to stay on the staff. If you don't know the name, Cooley started his career as a GA for Stoops and Klinkscale back in 2015. He moved up that coaching ladder, went to the MAC, and then is now in the professional ranks. And look, I got to say, I was kind of surprised, because that would, even though you would be going from the NFL to college, this would be the first time he would be a legit position coach. Whereas kind of in a sense like Cohen, he's in that just general assistant staff, or you're the assistant to the assistant kind of deal. Basically a GA or an analyst in the NFL ranks.
Yeah, you're glorified kind of, you're an analyst in the NFL, but you can actually do stuff on the field.
Right, right. So I was kind of surprised to see Cooley turn it down.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a thing where he maybe think that's too big of a jump for him right now, or he may want to ride out this NFL train, because you don't have to recruit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot more manageable job. He might just like living in L.A.
That's
30-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Just kicking it. So, yeah.
He might have a new girlfriend. He's like, I probably need to see this through. You know, you're right. You don't know. I do think the recruiting aspect plays a significant part in this. Because, I mean, as we mentioned last week, Clink did a bang-up job recruiting. And that's why when you told me about Archie Collins's recruiting background, it, even though the boss man said it's wide open right now, I believe that the job the job posting is coming up this week, is expiring this week, and I think I would like him to be my number one candidate on the big board.
Yeah, he makes the most sense when you just kind of look at it. Four-year old coach high school ball in Detroit for 9 seasons. He's from Michigan. Was a grad assistant at Michigan State under D'Antoni, and Pat Narduzzi. Then went to Central Michigan for 5 years. Worked as an assistant. Then is joined up with Pat Narduzzi at Pittsburgh for 4 years. And while with Pittsburgh, he's recruited Metro Atlanta. He's kind of built a little Georgia pipeline for the Panthers. They're getting a handful of players from Georgia. And he also recruited Ohio. But with that, you could see him kind of seamlessly fitting in with Kentucky there in Michigan. If he wanted to take over that area, he could help out there in the Atlanta area. I know Anwar Stewart is hitting it right now, but it's Kentucky is ready to attack Georgia more judiciously in the recruiting trail. And then also I think Nashville, probably an area Kentucky's built relationships, maybe he can go in and kind of help with too. So, yeah, I think he checks a lot of boxes, it seems like to me. To bring him in would make a lot of sense. I think he would be a pretty nice fit. And then when you look at some of the assistants they've been able to steal here recently, they saw, you know, they took a receiver coach from Oregon. Mm-hmm. They took a running back coach from Wisconsin, and they could take a secondary coach from Pittsburgh. That's nice plucking, I think. Mm-hmm. That I think looks good on Stoops and tells you on the outside how they see that this job with Stoops here. There's a lot of stability and room for growth, I think, for these assistants.
Nope, you're exactly right. So I still don't think we'll know anything. And at least when we're talking this time next week, or maybe even the week after that, but I would imagine that is locked up, ready to roll by June 6th, whenever the camps begin once again.
Yeah, I would imagine it happens. We said Memorial Day week or week before Memorial Day, I think last week. I would imagine we'll know sometime next week who the new guy is.
Yeah, I think it would. Oh, man, Memorial Day weekend's next week. Heck yes. I just love all of the stuff got going on right now. Very pumped. Got like grad parties, downsides, just planning vacations. Not really vacations as much as like weekend trip here and there. I just fired up. Summer. Going, moving, shaking, doing. We're back.
Yeah, we're now. Obviously, we'll have our own personal time away and stuff, but business wise, things are going to be picking up. We got recruiting camps, media days, practice. Maybe they'll actually let us go to practice. Do you think it's still going to be? Do you think it's still going to be Zoom only? Come train camp, or do you think they're going to have like some in person stuff?
I think that media day, that they will have a somewhat normal media day.
That makes sense.
And I think that they will probably have like a Zoom optional thing where whenever they bring in the lead assistant, you know, Cohen or why, you know, I think they might do like kind of what Tennessee did in their Josh Heupel intro. Or they just might completely do away with it.
That's what I was wondering if they would. Okay, like Monday Stoops talks on a game week, that would be Zoom. Yep. Tuesday offensive coordinator talks, that would be Zoom. It would open up to where the people there could get the players. Because it used to be where you could get multiple players, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After Tuesday, Wednesday practice.
You know, six or seven of them sometimes, you know.
Right. And now you don't get, you know, we've got one per week or whatever.
Yeah, and that, you know, it's also nice, too, when not everybody's getting the same stuff. And I can just talk to them like humans instead of through a screen, because you have much more human interactions with folks when you're not talking through a screen.
Right.
So I'm hoping that's the case. We'll see. We're also planning out just road trips and stuff. And, man, it's exciting. Exciting to be back.
Mm-hmm. Woo! It's a good time to be alive.
Yeah, and we've also got some other exciting kind of big picture news. So there's two things here, Luckett, that I thought, okay, that's pretty interesting. 24/7 called for a 6-0 start for the Wildcats. But Vegas, when putting together the odds, they actually had Missouri with the third best odds to win the SEC East. And had Kentucky tied with Tennessee at 14-1. Look, I understand having Tennessee and Kentucky on the same level, because you're going to get probably more money coming from the Tennessee side. So you got to make those odds a little bit lower. But from the Missouri standpoint, that's the – what is Vegas – or do they got the same Bruce Feldman treatment that all the – former App State coach gives to the media? I don't get it, especially when you look at the schedules too. Their schedule, it's not so much different than Kentucky's, and they got to play Kentucky on the road. So can you explain to me that?
I don't know. Those conference odds are always odd to me. I don't know how they come up with them. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're drinking that drink of what's Kool-Aid. No pun intended.
Oh, pun intended. Come on.
But I can't really explain that with Missouri. I know that. That's game week two. That's a huge game, because if you win that week two game, Kentucky can be 6-0.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they said, so they're saying beat Florida and LSU back to back.
Yeah, yeah. They're saying LSU's first loss is going to be Kentucky.
That'd be something now.
Hell yeah, it would.
And then could you imagine? Let's play. Let's live in this.
Well, dream big. Dream big for a little while. So
when we go to Athens, Kentucky 6-0, the week that would be leading into that game, and Georgia would have a loss because I think they play Alabama. Or no, never mind. They'd probably be 6-0 too. But yeah, or no, they play Clemson, so they might be 5-1. Yeah, that'd be a fun week in October.
Yeah,
leading into that game.
So I'm actually going to pull up something here because if Kentucky, we're going to dream big here. I think Kentucky LSU, by the way that they're scheduling this out, I think that could be a game day game. You have Alabama at A&M, which that'd
be tough to beat. Are you looking at do you got the schedule pulled up?
I do. That would be the toughest one to beat. Georgia's at Auburn as well. So that won't, yeah. Oh, gosh, I tried to dream real big there, but I still can't see him putting.
Well, Cincinnati at Notre Dame, that's going to be that could be one.
Is that, it could be more of a big noon, though. But no, they don't have rights to that.
Well, they'll go. Game day will go. They don't care who has it.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it all just depends.
There's too many good games that weekend. And Michigan, Nebraska, they're big name. God.
They won't do Auburn. I think Auburn low key might stink this year.
Right.
Let me see. I'm scrolling through here.
Yeah, the only other real big one, just from a name standpoint, is Michigan, Nebraska. Maybe if both teams are undefeated or something. Oh, Red River Shootout. No, it's Red River Shootout because ESPN's got the rights to Red River Shootout for the first time in a long time. They'll go there. Yeah, they'll set up shop. They'll hype up Sark. And right then they'll have Lee Corso shooting the guns right before kickoff. Damn it. Why? If only it was a different way. I still think you're going to get the Kentucky primetime slot just because of Keeneland, and the TV networks are kind enough to cater to Keeneland.
Yeah, you could get the 7 o'clock ESPN game.
Yeah. Which
is something they haven't gotten in a while at home.
Oh, particularly at home. I think they got it at Alabama last year. But before
they got
that,
Florida 2019, they got it.
Okay.
You had what McDonough at the time, but it's the big, I think, is it McDonough?
He might have been McDonough there by that time, but it is the McDonough Blackledge, which I really like Todd Blackledge, even though notice he kind of looks like Dan Mullen, which.
Yeah, that's good. That's one of my favorite broadcast teams. And I think McShay's with him, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. He's their sideline analyst, not sideline reporter, sideline analyst. They let him chime in a little bit more, but to dream big outside of the TV ratings kind of thing. Dude, I mean, one knock early on in the Stoops era was kind of getting hyped up for these big games and the dream big games, and then they don't win that game at home. A lot of Stoops's biggest wins have come on the road, whether it's Citrus Bowl
or the bowl games, right.
You know, like the Missouri walk-off, most of the big wins have come on the road. Now in 2018 you beat Mississippi State when they're in the top 25, but it wasn't good weather, so you didn't have a sold-out stadium. And you know, Kentucky fans, we just kind of look down on Mississippi State. We don't get as hyped for that as we should. Well, I hope that's not the case for the Missouri game, but I do think the just yearning to get back to the Krogue will ultimately convince a bunch of people to come out. Because
it'll be a 7:30 kick too.
It'll be the SEC Network special. Right. So when you're dreaming big, if you beat Missouri at night, okay, you get fans pumped. You beat the snot out of South Carolina. They're going to be really bad. Then you deliver and beat Florida at home. Because how many people just want to witness a Kentucky win over Florida? I think the last win over a Florida at home, that was the 86 game, correct? With Higgs and whatever, 86 or 84, whatever.
Yes, it was like 10-9 or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, that is – I mean, it's almost 30 years. And so – if you can deliver on that promise and then take down a team that won a title 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, you would have that whole week. If you beat Florida, you're sitting there at 5-0, it's going to be a crazy week. You would have to think that's going to be a hot, very hot ticket. The tailgate, I mean, number one, it's LSU coming into town for the first time since I believe 07.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got all of that. It'll be brought up. Like we'll have the, oral histories of the 07 game and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Get Rich Brooks talk about his tomatoes.
Right. But
which,
then,
by the way, I'm planting some tomatoes too. So watch out, Rich Brooks. Coming for you.
Yeah. And you got the Keeneland special. LSU is going to travel in droves for Keeneland for that game. You'd have to believe. Yeah, it'd just be a fun time. But you're right. That's the one thing he hasn't done is deliver some big home wins.
So if you do that,
he's got two great opportunities here in the schedule.
If you can win both of them, Kentucky fans will be in banana land. And all right, we're all going to Athens.
Yeah.
You know, because then it is that's a battle for the SEC East in October. You know, and I know you still have to go on the road against Mississippi State, which is Starkville, is a house of horrors, as we've well documented on this podcast. But man, having that kind of mojo, especially when a lot of people think that this is where Kirby gets his group, that this is the year Kirby actually does win it all. JT Daniels is the difference maker. If you're the one to pull out the Lucy with the football and just pull it out from underneath them, maybe it's game day at Georgia, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. CBS probably there if that's the case.
Oh, goodness gracious. Gosh. Dreaming big. Thanks for letting us dream big 24/7. That's what the month of May is for college football.
Yeah.
It's for dreaming big. Yeah.
But I think the goal should be, all right, beat Missouri week two. Take care of the non-con, win at South Carolina, get to 4-0 out of September, and then get one of those.
Split, yeah. Just get
and
one.
Then if you're 5-2 at going into the bye, in all the last five games are all very winnable.
Mm-hmm.
You're 5-2 coming out of the bye. If you could, win four, you're going to be 9-3. If you can even win three of the five, you're going to be 8-4, parting with top 25. That's
winning out too is obtainable, but there's TJ, my radio co-host TJ Walker, reminded me how bad Kentucky's been out of the bye week. Is when I first saw the schedule, I tried convincing myself, oh well, they got a week to relax, get their stuff together before they go to Starkville. I'm pretty sure the post bye week trip to, pretty sure when Dak beat Kentucky 42-7 and Vince went nuts was after a bye week as well. So
yes, they've lost, I think, twice going to Mississippi State out of the bye.
Yeah.
That last one you're talking, that wasn't Dak, that was Fitzgerald.
Oh.
And Vince went crazy on the team.
That's great.
And they all happened in around the same time in the calendar, I feel like.
Yeah, late October. So that's the one that, I mean, Mississippi State, they play spoiler quite often against Kentucky. If you get through the bye, so we're getting to the bye 5-2. You beat Mississippi State, then I'm convinced you're going 10-2, because Louisville stinks. Vandy's going to, even if Vandy throws some fight. Vandy stink.
Yeah, you're right. You beat Mississippi State there, and then you can kind of ride some momentum to end the year.
Man, it's exciting. Very exciting. Think about how packed that place will be for Tennessee, just to just rub it in their faces. Oh man.
I think there's a scenario where this could be the third or the best Stoops teams. All right. Number one is 2018. Number two, you can have a debate. I think you could argue 16, 19, 20. I think even y'all 20 in there if you throw the full season. I think 20 got skewed a little bit because the pass game was so bad and they play three top 10 offenses. You put that 2020 defense in another season.
Oh yeah.
That's probably a top 20 defense, top 20, top 25 defense. You look at, they had two starting corners, two pros at starting at cornerback, and all SEC safety in Corker, who will be this year, a first-round Mike linebacker, a stud at nose. Josh Pascoe is going to be a draft pick. I think Jordan Wright and Weaver on the edge could be draft picks. Like that was a good defense. It just, the numbers were skewed because they played three, I think, top 10 offenses that just lit them up. So, yeah, I think I think the argument's there. But say,
hell, if you put them on that 16 right. team, too, they're freaking juggernaut because they could put up some points.
Exactly.
16.
Exactly.
But
that's what I'm saying.
Second best team.
Yeah. The third, let's just say they're in that glob with 16, a 20, or 19, 20. They can't, that's 8-4 with this schedule, I think, personally. Now, I think 16, you probably have to drop down because their defense was so bad. But then you kind of go back and forth to 20 because offense was so bad. So it's kind of a yin and yang there. But, yeah, I just think the schedule – because that 16 team should have – I mean, they dropped an egg that first game. But once they kind of
– found themselves.
Got their feet out of – they were a top 30 team, I think, that year. But, yeah, I think you could make the argument that, you know, if you're just in that area for Kentucky this year, then 8-4 is there with this schedule.
So – my question to you, aside from actually, I think I know your answer to this question, so it doesn't make it as fun. But what does this team have to do to be the second best Stoops team in from a practical roster production standpoint? What do they have to do to be the second best Stoops team? Or hell, even the first?
Yeah, I mean, offensively, it's just finding some semblance of a passing game. Having a quarterback that can distribute the football efficiently to their playmakers. Getting Chris Rodriguez has got to be probably a first team all SEC back. I mean, you're talking about, 1,600 yard season where he's just, where everything starts with him. And then you hit him with stuff off of that. And then defensively, I really just think they got to hold up to what they've done the last three seasons. If they do that, they can just stay in that kind of realm. And then they pick up the passing game. I think that's a top 25, top 20 team, and then boom, then that's probably the second best team in the Stoops era.
The one thing I worry about is from a Havoc stat standpoint, you can't replicate the interceptions and your pass rush struggled. So
it was also the best run defense we've seen, I think, Kentucky's had since Stoops has been here. So that's a little give and take on that. Together,
I do think that this team will be more like the 16 team than any of those others we mentioned. Just from
like a year where the offense is going to carry it a little bit,
right? Sure. Right, because between Wandale Robinson, Chris Rodriguez, and Josh Ali, and the tight ends, I mean, that's four guys on offense, four offensive skill players with Keaton Upshaw that are going to be NFL players, and if you just have somebody to get it to them, then this will be a rare case where.
And a good offensive line again, right?
Yeah. So that's, man, I like that we just went down this road we didn't expect to go on, because it just sucks because just it's all predicated on that damn quarterback again.
Well, more than the quarterback. Bottom line is, if Cohen's good, thing. Kentucky's hit a hard ceiling right now. The reason you hire Cohen is to get a hammer and break the glass. If he can do that, then that's when we can start, that's when we can start sitting up in our seat a little bit, start talking about, 10-2, Sugar Bowl trips. This is the spot. This is the year we would get Georgia because they have this, and this missing. We have this, and this on the roster.
You do not know how if we are in New Orleans on New Year's Eve before a Kentucky football Sugar Bowl, euphoria. I'm like,
yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's galaxy brain. It's just, that get me there. Oh
yeah. You can have your college football playoff.
Yes. Give me the Sugar Bowl.
That's like my version of Iowa fans when they had that undefeated season, they were happier that they got to go to the Rose Bowl than to go to the playoff and get curb stomp Alabama. That's for me. Have your playoff. Let me have New Orleans New Year's night, New Year's Day night.
Then you get to sleep off the hangover a little bit.
Yes. 3 days in New Orleans, and then we come home. We can have a bunch of regrets to live through, but also got to live a great experience going to that game. Yeah. Sign me up for that. That would be that'd be an all-timer.
Oh, man.
But that's it's the Cohen hire. That's why you make the hire. You feel like Stoops just raised the floor, but now they're hitting their head on the ceiling. To break through that, it's about finding a quarterback. But to do that, you got to get an offensive coordinator to do that. And so we'll see how it goes. But if Cohen hits, it's a game changer. It's an absolute game changer.
There's one thing that Cohen said last week that I thought was something new. You know, he was on with our boss, Matt Jones. If you don't listen to Cohen every week, I don't blame you. Because from a quarterback standpoint, you know, he didn't really say anything new in that regard, but he did at least acknowledge the lack of depth at wide receiver. And I think when you talk about the depth problem, you just talk about reliable depth. Like, you have Wandale and Ali. After that, it's just go show me. Like, you, we see potential here, but Michael Drennan, Isaiah Cummings, you all just, you've got to show me. And he said, he hit a spring talking point talking about, well, you know, you can use the tight ends and also the running backs. It's like running backs are probably our most talented skill position group top to bottom. And we've got to find a way to get more than one on the field at the same time and not just playing them out of the backfield, which, you know, it got the hamster wheels turning and we saw smoke. He caught a couple of hitches last year, split out where, you know, the defense was just like, what the hell is this guy doing out here? Is this a decoy or is he going to do a jet sweep? So he's done that previously. And Vito Tisdale, or not Vito, Travis Tisdale, he could be a Trenton Holloway jet sweep kind of guy. And Jatai McClain, I haven't seen it before, but if you start on special teams for a season, I assume you've got some God-given athleticism to be able to do some
stuff. Yeah, he caught the ball some in high school.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's just a version of the NFL game coming, Cohen bringing with him to college. Throwing the ball to the backs is a big deal at the next level. And I think he's just trying to do that here because it's an easier way to create matchups. It's a way to create easy throws for your quarterback. So, yeah, I think
AJ Rose could have used last year.
Too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Because I know that that's what they're going to be trying to use him in Minnesota.
And you know, he's the lack of wide receiver options, quality options. You got to manufacture the pass game somehow, and that's a way to do it, is getting the backs involved. I think you're going to see a lot more running back screen game. That's not something we really saw very much with Grand. I think you're going to see that. I think, yeah, you could definitely see some like 21 or 22 personnel using a running back in the slot, motioning, maybe going to empty and then motioning like Rodriguez back into the formation and all, like, all different types of stuff. But, yeah, right. We'll see. I mean, we all have – there are the talking points coaches hit, and then we don't ever see that on the field. So there's still not much we know. You know, we still haven't seen his offense even in a practice setting yet. So we don't know much.
We're just watching the Rams throw to Cooper Kupp. Yeah,
we're going to be in just discovery and learn mode for the first 6 weeks of the season, trying to figure out, you know, what exactly he wants to do and kind of what his MO is, the play caller and all that good stuff.
Before he went on KSR, Vince Marrow, he did his – you know, Vince is a good P.T. Barnum, man. He's a great hype man, especially for a guy like Stoops, who, you know, Stoops isn't all about selling himself, that kind of deal. He's not a big let's go to the media and talk some smack kind of deal. Vince takes care of that for him, and he flat out said, he's like, oh, Klink's going to Michigan? I think we're a better – nope, you know what? I don't think we're a better program. I know we're a better program. And that's what leads us to – the CBS annual college football Power Five coaching rankings, ranking all 65 Power Five teams, including Notre Dame. And Vince was right. The college football panelists put their heads together and put Jim Harbaugh at number 23, one spot behind Mark Stoops at number 22. It's the second straight year Stoops has cracked the top 25. And he stayed put after the 5-6 season. They moved him up quite a bit for adjusted on the fly with Bowden. And then last year was kind of a, okay, not bad, but you know, let's do some more for me, Mark. Let's do some more for me.
Yeah. I think last season he met expectations, all things considered. It was all SEC schedule. They, like I said, they played three top 10 offenses, lost to them because they just didn't have the ammo to keep up for the most part. And he made that change to try to fix that. And I think just the stability. He's been here a while. Kentucky keeps winning. They go to bowls every year. He's meeting expectation. He's raised the program's floor. So, yeah, I mean, I had him mark at 23. So, I think 22 right there is fair. I think that's right where he should be.
I'm with you. I do think it's – like, I love just – I mean, even though Kentucky, when do we ever come encounter with – Michigan fans, but I love the timing of that ranked higher than Harbaugh, even though Tom Fornelli, who actually writes the piece after all of the different people vote. I'm sure that's about a dozen people between your Bud Elliott's, your Chip Patterson's, all of the college football talking heads they got at CBS and 24/7. He's the one that writes them. And I agree with Fornelli in that, like, you know, dropping Harbaugh a lot is just – I know they were bad last year, but it's all the Ohio State thing. Like, he's done more than some guys on there have done, like Matt Campbell. Like,
well, the thing with this is, Nick, is recency bias comes in big on this. You see, Tom Allen makes a huge jump. Is Indiana's season last year, was it better than Kentucky's 2018 season?
No. It was almost identical, except Kentucky beat Penn State, beat another traditional power in a bowl game. Where did Indiana lost the Outback Bowl, correct? So, like,
To Ole Miss.
Right. So,
to middle of the road SEC team.
Yeah. So, like, that, whereas Kentucky capped it off, because it's very similar in that they played the big dog in their division for a chance to go to the Big Ten title.
So, like, Tom Allen checks in at 20. He made this monstrous jump. Like, I had Tom Allen at 24, had him a spot behind Stoops. I had him make a big jump, but, like, he's not – like, he's – I don't think he should be ahead of Stoops or some other guys they have him ahead of. Let's see here. Like, Brian Kelly they have above Jimbo Fisher and Kirby Smart.
Has Brian Kelly won a national championship?
No.
Like, Jimbo Fisher, he's won one.
He's played Kirby Smart twice recently head-to-head and lost both games. Kirby Smart's recruits at a higher level. He's just in the SEC, so he hasn't been able to make the playoff twice yet. But when he made the playoff, he won a game. He didn't get boat raced. He's played Alabama closer than they have, so
boat raced.
that doesn't make sense to me. I like the Kirby Smart stuff. I just don't really understand. I think he's been like really, really good, but he gets judged against Saban, which is ridiculous. Like, I wonder, like, with all this playoff stuff, like, how much of it is just the fatigue is just Saban-driven? Like, when he retires, how much more, like, open is it going to be?
Yeah, well, and especially in Georgia's case, when you get so close to winning it all, and then you're not immediately right back in there. And especially in a place like Georgia that is seemingly always the slipper, you know, what's the joke is Gonzaga is just like Georgia, two bulldogs that can't win the big one.
Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, Florida, all the fan bases love to make the 19, you know, you haven't won a national championship since 1980 jokes to them.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get why Brian Kelly was like Brian Kelly. I had him at 6-7. It's not like I don't think he's good, but. Like, to have those two under him just didn't make much sense to me.
Right.
And then Matt Campbell, I think, is the big one, a big jump. I had him up. I put him at 16 because my thing with Campbell last year was he hadn't cashed in on the big season.
Last year. It would have been bigger if they didn't drop the opener to Louisiana at home.
Yeah, but they made the Big 12 championship. They were right. They split with Oklahoma. They were right there. And they beat a pretty good Oregon team there in the Fiesta. That's the big year. He cashed in the top 10 finish. That's the big year. And that's so – I had him a pretty big jump there. But, yeah, I just think recency bias on all this is tough. Like, I kept Leach in my top 25. They were bad last year. But, like, it's more of a career kind of award, too. Like,
correct.
He's done well. But then also I dropped David Cutcliffe a lot because I was like, you know, this has been, like, 5 or 6 years now of
– what are you doing?
Yeah, just, like, you just kind of – seems like you're just barely hanging on.
So, whereas Cutcliffe comes in at 29 on their rankings, and you've got him at – where do we see?
Keep going down. I dropped him 13 spots from the 30s last year, so I got him at 45.
Ooh.
Even I have recency bias on this. Like, it's hard to do these.
Right.
But, like, Herm Edwards is another one that jumped. He's 500 in the Pac-12. And they have him at 21. Like, what? Like, why? Because he's a big name, I guess. I don't. And I had him at 30 because, like, the top 30 are pretty easy to do. It's when you get into, like, the 32, 33 to probably 50.
Split in the middle of the pack. Yeah, maybe a bowl game, maybe not. I can definitely tell you've got Jeff Hafley bias. I love it. You're a Jeff Hafley guy. Stick to your guns. That's who you are as a man. You like Jeff Hafley. I also just from a, you know, rival, I'm going to save the rivals, but from a practical standpoint, when you're looking at all of this through a UK lens, you talked about the schedule making like, well, if they're up in that second group, like if they're in that second tier of Stoops teams at UK, the schedule, here's evidence that your schedule is good, is two of your four road games, or excuse me, five, or is it two, or you got five road games?
Two of the four. Or just, yeah, two of the five, because Louisville's on the
Louisville's road. On the road this year. Two of those are at South Carolina. Shane Beamer is the consensus 65th ranked coach at the very bottom, and then Vanderbilt is 63rd. Right. That those are gifts when that's your road game instead of Florida.
First year coaches in total rebuild modes.
Yes. Same thing with Josh Heupel at Tennessee, who's 52nd on this list, despite having success at UCF.
Yeah, I had him at 56, so right in that same area. But yeah, and then Scott Satterfield,
who
I hammered in these Yankees. So those are your road games. You know, you look at, you know, three of them are against bottom third coaches in the league, and then you got the Kirby trip, and then Mike Leach.
I love it. Oh, I absolutely love it. He was the second biggest dropper in the CBS sports rankings, down to 45th.
Right. So I was a little harder on him than they were.
Those are your three road games. Three road.
Yeah, three of the five. And then you got Leach and Starkville and Kirby and Athens.
Man. Love the way the schedule's opening up. And yeah, just to shove it to the rivals, it's great when you're just 20 spots ahead of them. And especially when momentum. Yeah, that stuff just matters. It matters so much, particularly during just talking season right now. You know, with all the stuff happening at Louisville yesterday, they're still licking their wounds to an extent. And it seems like every time they try to get excited about anything, something bad happens. So
yeah,
they can't get out of their own damn way. But absolutely love seeing Satterfield, who was a media darling last year. Hell, him and Jeremy Pruitt. ACC Coach of the Year. And then Tennessee, they were the flavor of the month because they won, what, five straight games in a row? I saw a stat this week, Lockett. It was from David Hale, who's ESPN's preeminent ESPN reporter. And he noted that Louisville was 0-6 when it was a one-possession game. They had the ball with 10 minutes to go last year. 0-6. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I mean, turnovers in one possession games like that doesn't happen every year. That was some bad luck. But my biggest thing with Louisville is like the roster is just not in good shape. They haven't recruited very well. And then the whole off field, like my ranking with Satterfield, obviously I follow them more closely than I guess these other programs.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing some of the stuff we're seeing and hearing some stuff I'm hearing, it's
not good.
Yeah, this is not good right now. So that heavily bakes into that, obviously. So yeah, I kind of think this is going to be last year at Louisville.
So the thing about that stat too, Luckett, is for one, yeah, okay, I can be convinced that some of it is luck, and especially when you got a quarterback like Cunningham, dude just loves committing turnovers, but. When I see Louisville fans, well, they were disproportionately lucky the year before, so it had to, you know, water had to
find. They were. That, yeah.
It was only three games in a 12-game season, maybe four if that NC State game in 2019, like it ended up being a two-possession game. That might have been. So four versus six, losing and winning all. Some of that's just coaching, dude. Like six times you're in there and you can't get it done in a 10-game season.
What we've seen with Satterfield, when he plays teams with like a legitimate talent advantage over his team, it's been blowout city.
That Miami game?
Miami and Florida State his first year. That's Clemson, obviously. Notre Dame, Kentucky. And then they played, give them credit for beating Mississippi State, had more talent in the bowl game. So you have to give them credit for that. But then this next year, I mean, you saw kind of the same thing happen, I think. And then they lost some close get teams, some, you know, coin flip games. They're like to Boston College and to I'm trying to think of some other ones. But Miami, they got housed. Who else did they get housed by?
You name it, they probably got.
Yeah, I can't either. I'm trying to, because the schedule's so weird that I'm pulling up their schedule right now. Let's see the 2020 schedule. Okay, Miami, they got house. Pittsburgh, they lost a close game. Georgia Tech was inexcusable. Notre Dame was a weird game that they lost. You know, they beat a bad Florida State team. Virginia Tech, close game. Virginia, close game. Syracuse, got awful. Boston College, close game. Like, they just lost a lot of close games last year. But the schedule is going to get tougher now when you add Clemson and Kentucky back on it here 2021.
Ooh, and they
plus Ole Miss, plus UCF.
Prime time. They're the last. That's that Monday night special where all the world's going to be watching for about an hour.
Yeah, and that Monday night has given us classic moments in the past. The Butch Jones trash can. Swag Kelly against Florida State. Florida State has that crazy comeback victory. Last year it had BYU, like Zach Wilson's coming out party. BYU beat Navy by like a drum.
1,000. That was a weird game.
That's usually one of my favorite nights of the season. It's because that game that Monday night game has a tendency to get a little wacky.
Man, I'm looking forward to, when I first saw the times too, I was like, ooh, that would be fun. Because like, I thought we were going to get another Notre Dame game on a Monday night where it's like, ooh, time to go to the party platform or whatever the hell they call it. Yeah. Party deck. But yeah, they going on the road, another neutral site game. There's some great games that opening weekend. Got a very good schedule.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be awesome
on the slate. You know, we'll talk about that more at length at a later time. But before then, though, we got the PGA Championship this weekend.
We do
down at Kiowa, the Ocean Course. My brother, who actually appeared on this podcast when we went down to Georgia a couple of years ago, he's going Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Bastard. He's a Charlestonian, so he gets to live the good life. And like it, the last time we had a major, you gave out your picks. When I compiled my pool between me and my college buddies, I hit play on the podcast and I submitted my picks and I won I came in second. I came in the money. Second out of like 30. Pretty good. Pretty good. So you gave us Bill Zalatoris. Who else you got this week that's going to come from the top rope at the PGA?
So this, like with these majors, there's actually value to bet on these because there's really probably only 12 to 15 golfers that actually have a legit shot at winning. So if you pick the right one, you could have something. Now this course, Nick, it's the longest in major tournament history.
Whoa.
7,876 yards, so nearly 8,000 yards. So you got to be long off the tee. If you're not long off the tee, it's going to be a long week. Now, with that, Pete Dye, who also designed the TPC Sawgrass, the players, he does mix in some dog legs and stuff. It has some trees lined in certain areas where you do need accuracy off the tee. But really, it's about getting off the tee, and then it's with your irons, hitting into the green. And then if you can do that, that's going to give you makeable putts. So really you're looking for ball strikers this week. And like for me, Colin Morikawa is probably the best iron player in the world. He's not super long off the tee, but he's pretty accurate. He won the PGA Championship last year. He's going off at 30-1 to win. Like that's a lot of, that's good value. I believe he's number 8 on the board.
He's 5-1 to make top 30. Yeah. Like that's
really good. You're right. That's really good odds for a player that good. And he's number 6 player in the world right now. And I just think, I don't understand. Now, his putter is bad. Like, he has putting issues. But if the putter's just average and he's striking the ball like he usually does, he's going to be a top 10 player this week. You know, looking at some other, like, Will Zalatoris again is a guy. He's a great ball striker, so he's going to be in it. An underdog I kind of like is Keegan Bradley. He won the 2011 PGA Championship. He's been playing really good golf this year. A bad putter, but he can ball strike. He's had 3 top 10 finishes in his last 7 starts. Now, I played him to make the cut at minus 225 because I feel like he's playing so well, and that's a pretty good price to make the cut bet.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So he's a guy like a guy to stay away, like Patrick Reed. It's not a super great, like he's an elite putter, elite around the green, but not a super great ball striker. Like, I don't think this is a good course for him. I played him to miss the cut at plus 225.
Yeah,
then Hovland is another guy who's been playing really well. He's got 10 top 10 finishes this season.
Ooh, that might be a nice 18-1 to win.
Yeah. He's going to break through eventually.
I feel like Xander is in, like, when is Xander Schauffele finally going to win one?
Yeah, Xander's right there. I just don't know if this is the one spot for him. Right. Now, Xander, like, he's added some length off his tee shots this last year that it's going to give him a chance. But I don't think the tournament for him.
Man, Zalatoris has some good top 30, top 40 odds too.
Yeah.
Here's something that a little betting tip that TJ had was parlaying golfers to make the cut with like an NBA playoff game this weekend.
One you like, right?
Right. Then you just really juices it up. You know, it's kind of like whenever you really like a single horse at the track and you just do a double and hit all, you know, and just like,
or hockey too, I guess. If you're in the Stanley Cup playoffs too, you can do that.
That's a fun way to just juice up some of these bets. I've only done the pool thing until recently, but some of these sports books have just been giving away money with promos where it's like, hey, hit over 90 points in an NBA game. It's like one team or two where they just give you 25 free bucks. So I've got 50 extra bucks lying around. I'm going to have to just spray the board with some $10 bets, you know?
That's like, golf is fun, but it's not like a football game where you can just like, all right, I'm taking home dog plus 11.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to spray the board. You have to have a little bit bigger bankroll to really have fun. Or do you just got a nickel and dime bets, which
I think I'm
not the greatest, but the payouts are good.
The top 30 bets, because they still give like 9-1 odds. And I feel
top 10, top 20 are probably my favorite plays. I've been getting into missed make cuts lately. Like Ricky Fowler has missed, I think, 8 of 13 cuts or something.
Bryson,
I played him a couple times and missed cut. And
Bryson at the Masters, good odds on that. Bryson at the Masters was brutal because I had a buddy at like 17-1 and missed the cut. And what did he need? Like 5 birdies in a row to make it, and the bastard did it. Like, that was brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, Koepka came back from injury last week, and he was like plus 275, plus 300 to miss the cut. And he missed like the last two cuts he played in, and he missed it like not even – it wasn't even close. And like, Ricky has missed a bunch of them, so like, he's been a safe play. And he's playing this week if you want to look into that. There's that golf. There's a lot of stuff going on. Like, you can get in the matchups and all that good stuff. Top 10s, top 20s. You can bet, you can bet anything you could imagine.
Let's see here. I'm trying to see what's Brooks to miss the cut this week. Cause I guess he's technically, is he still hurt?
I mean, he cannot squat to read the green. If you see him this week, Nick, he's got like
one leg hiked up. He's doing like the little like hamstring his
one,
stretch.
One leg is like a full stride out while the other knee, like he's while you lean on the other knee. It's like
he's plus 150 to miss the cut.
Yeah. That it dropped a lot after last week because it wasn't even close last week.
Oh, it's fun. Should be some good TV on the tubes between that NBA, NHL playoffs. Got Downs After Dark on Saturday. It's cowboy themed. Like it. I'm gonna have a little handlebar mustache. So
speaking of your brother going races. I was watching some of the coverage today on Wednesday. That'd be a fun one to go to.
Indy?
No, I'm talking about it's PGA. You said your brother was going
Yeah. Oh, especially at the ocean course too.
Yeah. Over half the holes are just right on the ocean. So you're just walking down the sidewalk. It's the ocean's right there. And then it's a huge course. So you can spread out. There's a lot of room for like the galleries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That'd be a fun one to go to.
Especially right now in May, instead of when they normally have this in August,
They moved it a couple years ago to get them out of football season for the tour championship.
And it's nice.
Yeah, it's nice to have one every month starting in April.
Oh, man. Love it. Well, we hope you love this podcast. It was a busy one. It was a fun one. He'll share his entire coaching rankings at some point in the near future. And we'll be back next week. Who knows what news will be on our hands, but hey, like we always say, football never stops in the bluegrass. For Adam Luckett and Nick Rouse, this has been 11 Personnel. Remember to go Cats and go Kroger.